Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I am your host, Julie McLaughlin. Today, I have with me Doug Lacombe, who is the founder of Communicado. And today, we're going to be chatting with Doug and learning a little bit about his journey of starting his agency, some challenges that he's had to overcome along the way, and also how he is continually working to grow Communicado. So thank you so much for joining us today, Doug.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So to get started, I'd love to know what really motivates or inspires you as an agency owner.
Well, I'm really passionate about the internet and technology. I'm definitely one of sort of the original gadget geeks. And so it's actually, I just love the work. And the fact that I can make a living doing it is a happy coincidence. I'm just constantly intrigued by the changes in communications. I started my career in the newspaper business, so I know legacy media pretty well. Mm-hmm. And then very, very early on, I put the Saskatoon Star Phoenix on the internet in around 1995, spring of 1995. So I was kind of there at the beginning. So it's really just been pulling on that thread ever since. There's been a lot of curves and so on in my career, but yeah, I like the tech. It's fun.
Yeah. Awesome. And I'd love to know, you know, what your story is around starting Communicado. What was that deciding factor that you were going to go out on the limb and start the agency?
Well, my not so funny joke is that I don't know that I would have jumped off a cliff on my own, but since someone pushed me, I might as well have looked for a parachute, and I did, and that was Communicado. Essentially, I got downsized, laid off. There was a company that I was working for, a newswire company, and I had a good run with them. We had a very amicable departure, but they decided that due to market pressures, they had to get rid of a bunch of VPs. And at that moment in my life, I was sort of old enough with a good enough network behind me. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I can stand another corporate gig. And so I essentially thought, you know, it's time to take a flyer on this. And decided that, you know, well, we'll give it a year. And if I go broke in a year, I'll go back to working in the salt mines, as they say. Mm-hmm. And I'll just carry on with working as an independent and building an agency. And I had some early advice that suggested that don't go out under your own name if you want to pass this along or extract some value when you retire or whatever. So I, rather than Doug Lacombe Communications, I went with Communicado, and that's mm-hmm. been an excellent umbrella for me to kind of morph and shift over the 13 years now that we've been in business.
Yeah. I think that's a great tip is that, you know, always be thinking ahead of, you know, where you want to be growing your agency, what your long-term plan is. And I think that's really great advice. So how do you continually grow Communicado? What are some strategies that you use for bringing leads into your agency on a regular basis?
We survive almost exclusively on referrals. And so all of our, what I call house marketing, it's a very old newspaper term. So our own marketing about ourselves is really just to remind people that we're out here so that when the moment comes when they're like, oh, I need a website, or oh, I need a somebody to handle our Facebook page or whatever, SEO, et cetera. Then they go, oh yeah, those guys, they had a blog post last week, or I got their newsletter or something. So most of our marketing is really, hey, we're here. And also we know what we're talking about. And the rest of it is all reputation and service and treating customers with honesty and integrity and, you know, admitting to your mistakes and sort of, you know, just being decent with people. And happily, that's been a formula that has kept us fed and watered for many years. So I used to do a lot more public speaking when I first started out. And but that hasn't been necessary for years. It's much more fun to do podcasts from the comfort of my chair with lovely people like you, and then and just get the referrals, because people think, oh boy, you know, we had a good experience with Comunicado, we'll send somebody their way. So yeah, we're just blessed in that regard.
Amazing. Okay. And so I'd love to learn a little bit more about, you know, your strategy for public speaking and how that helped you to grow Comunicado.
Yeah, I think, you know, before everybody started using the phrase thought leadership, and I, you know, a lot of my background was consumer marketing, or, well, B2B marketing, not consumer, but pure marketing, old school marketing. And so I think features and benefits. And I, so when I go to do public speaking, I'm really in the mode of sort of a case study, almost that MBA, like problem, solution, how did you implement it? What happened? And and so really, if you kind of wander around the world and tell people, here's how I solved this problem with somebody else, they go, wow, I have that problem too. I'd like that solved. And then they see themselves in it, and along they come. And so, yeah, it's really about FaceTime. And the beauty of public speaking or a podcast or, you know, webinars is you can convey a sense of personality, because there's a huge sort of compatibility question there. Like, can I stand this person? Right. And, and, you know, I'm admittedly a bit of an oddball and sort of a powerful or a personality that has a lot of chutzpah, I guess, or something. And so, you know, I'm not everybody's flavor, right? It's fine. And so if they see you at a conference, then they go, oh yeah, you know, I could probably put up with this chucklehead for a while and we'll get a good website out of it or whatever. And so, yeah, that's really the thing, was sort of get out there and, you know, wave the flag and let people see what it might be like to work with us. And so it's kind of like the chicken fingers at Costco. You're sampling the product.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, for anyone who's maybe interested in picking up more speaking gigs, how did you go about that when you were first starting out?
Well, my corporate background had already predisposed me to do a lot of speaking gigs. And so I was already being invited by virtue of my jobs. And so that was helpful, obviously. And again, there's a huge benefit. You can't underestimate how much benefit there is to just being kind of older when things happen. And you're like, oh yeah, I know a guy, I'll just call him. So, you know, when I was obviously in my 20s, that was a whole other matter. But I had done public speaking from my 20s onward, and for various reasons in various situations. So it wasn't that hard to get gigs. I did a lot of volunteer work, which with the CPRS and IBC and some different nonprofits, and even conferences and so on. And so a lot of those things spawned opportunities to speak. And then ultimately the free speaking sometimes became paid speaking. And so that was really ideal, because you're getting paid to market yourself and also provide an education to people, so that you sort of, everybody wins. So yeah, it was, when you think of, like, say, a conference, and of course COVID really blew a hole in that. So that took a lot of adaptation for a lot of folks. But when you think of a conference, so, like, I know Swansea Communications puts on conferences all over Canada, and they do a great job with post-secondary or municipal conferences, all to do with communications. And I would just kind of email or phone them up and go, hey, you know, where are you going to be next? Oh, Vancouver. Okay, great. And what's the theme? And blah, blah. And I go, well, I got an angle for that theme. What do you think? And I would pitch the seminar. And, you know, sometimes it fit, sometimes it didn't. That was okay. We were all cool with that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, generally that's sort of how I pitched it. But at the end of the day, if somebody's a conference organizer, they need to put bums in seats. So you mm-hmm. need to present to them a product that they can resell. And that's really the mentality you got to go in with. It's not, I want to speak about this. It's what does your audience want and what will get you more tickets sold so I can help you so you can help me.
And I love that.
So that's just another angle on customer-centric marketing, right? Like it's just, yeah. Pay attention to the downstream and it'll work out.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I really like that you were doing, you know, the volunteer work to help create more opportunities as well. I think, you know, volunteering is such a great way to network. Personally, I'm part of my local Rotary Club and it allows you to connect with, there's so many entrepreneurs in Rotary specifically. I don't know about the organizations that you were related to, that you were working with, but, yeah, it's a great way to give back. And then of course, you know, just network and, you know, allows you to just open up those opportunities down the road as well.
Yeah, 100%. One of my favorite experiences that just popped into my head when you were saying that, there's an organization called Calgary Reads that it's in transition now. It's being morphed into something else. But for, I don't know, maybe 20 some years, it had a very robust program to help non-readers become readers. And that comes with a whole bunch of whether people are economically deprived or they're in a violent household or whatever the deal is that they, and but the way out of poverty is literacy. Mm-hmm. And so they had this really great program, and their big fundraiser every year is a book sale, used book sale. And it was like a hockey arena full of books. It was like a reader's paradise. And, but you know, in order for it to be a successful fundraiser, you have to just pack that arena with people that are willing to spend, you know, 20, 30 bucks on $1 books. And so, I, through kind of happenstance, I wound up on a committee, and we went off and did social media promotion. And this was very early, like I was still at the Newswire, so it would have been 2008 or so. So, you know, pretty early in social media marketing space. And we fluked off through I was very clumsy about this, but I got Jan Arden to endorse us and or to suggest that people should come and buy books.
Cool.
And it just like we did the surveys on site. And how'd you hear about it? Oh, Jan Arden said it on Twitter, and it was amazing, right? And I was just like, this is so fantastic. We raised a bunch of money. We had the biggest book sale of up until that time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm it was just fun to play with the toys and you know, do it because on a volunteer basis, you can just kind of flex your creative muscles without too many layers of approval. You know, it's not like corporate.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Very good. I love it. So what are some ways, I know you mentioned that you guys run off of a ton of referrals from existing mm-hmm. clients. So what are some ways that you maintain happy clients who are going to help bring in those referrals for you?
Well, we try to serve the daylights out of them. So that's kind of a, you know, people will argue about whether it's a good idea to be like, when they call, you jump, but we are of the you call and we jump variety. So, you know, that does lead to some evening and weekend nonsense that can be fun, but nonetheless, you know, they can count on us. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, especially because pretty much what we're doing is digital public relations. And so if there's a crisis afoot, or if there's a, you know, something really nasty brewing online or in the mainstream media that's spilling over into online, you know, you don't want to hear, yeah, I'll get back to you Monday. That's not cool. So basically we just have to prove that we're available. So that's one of the things. There's been, you know, I'd say a handful of instances where we chatted with a client and said, you know what, in spite of it looking good when we got started and signed the contract and did all this stuff, I don't think we're a good fit for you. I'm pretty sure you don't think we're a good fit for you. And, you know, we just had very honest and respectful conversations that said, you know what, let's just wrap this up and part ways. And mm-hmm. you know, that's so people, funny enough, you know, lots of those people referred us because it was just a case of not a fit, not that, you know, they didn't suck as a client. We didn't suck as an agency. It was like, mm-hmm. oops, not what you thought you were getting and not what we thought we were giving. And okay. Right. So, you know, there's sort of a whole ethical values-based kind of underpinning to that, which is effectively do unto others, and people spread the word when you do that. So it's it's not hard to follow the golden rule. My mom pretty much I was going to say beat that into me, but that's not a golden rule activity. but my mom made sure I knew it.
So is there anything that you're now able to identify in a prospect? I don't want to use the word red flag, but it's just maybe not an alignment of the types of clients that you want to be working with.
Yeah. So, well, there's a few filters, and I mean, I spent enough time in sales, and in many sales training courses and whatnot very early in my career that, you know, I kind of have a system that's almost intuitive now. But so there's the big three that every sales trainer will tell you about. Is this the decision maker? Do they have budget and authority to make that, use that budget? And is this a fishing expedition, or does it have a real deadline, this project, right? So if somebody comes along and they're effectively a tire kicker and says, you know, someday I'd like to have a website. Oh, are you the one that gets to decide that? Well, no, that'll be my boss's boss. And okay, you know, how much do you think? Well, we set aside $5,000 for that. Okay, you're not real. So, you know, those kind of filters help a lot with, you know, you got to separate the wheat from the chaff. And we position ourselves as a, we're definitely not the cheapest. We're sort of high value for the money, but we're definitely higher priced. And you know, in fact, just recently we won a writing gig, a SEO copywriting gig for a website. And the client said, yeah, you were the most expensive, but also the most qualified. And I'm like, sweet. That's exactly where I want to be. It's
amazing.
You know, it's value for the money, right? Like you know, we have over 30 years in combined experience. And so, you know, that costs something. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I think that it all comes down to sort of values and just being as crisp and professional. When I was younger, I used to get a lot more excited about perceived slights and, you know, kind of all the things that basically pertain to ego. And now I'm just really kind of all business. I'm just like, you know what? I don't know that we're getting along. Why don't we quit?
Yeah.
And people are good with that, as it turns out. So, you know, there's a certain confidence that comes out of that attitude, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And then, so what would you say has been the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome as you've grown your agency?
Well, geez, there's so many. I mean, you know, business ownership is fraught with sleepless nights and worry. And mm-hmm. So, you know, you kind of find your sweet spot and hopefully you're humming along. But I mean, you know, COVID blew a big hole in things, but only temporarily, because as it turned out, it was really good for us, which is an odd thing to say or even realize, but because it just put so much more emphasis on digital and websites that we just got a lot more business. And so but there was that moment, that 4 months where everybody just froze and wouldn't spend any money. And you're just like, dah, now what? Mm-hmm. And, you know, thankfully we had enough years behind us to weather the storm and get through to the other side. But, like there are things in the sense of lessons learned, there are things that I, am not skilled at and don't like, and this will be pretty typical for a lot of entrepreneurs: accounting. Don't like it at all. You know, barely got through my accounting classes in my MBA, and you know, my prof even said I went through kicking and screaming, which is probably an accurate portrayal. So you know, I just work really hard to find people that I can trust. And I know enough from my education and my practical experience to make sure they're not ripping me off. That's enough. And I don't try to do much of it myself. And so there's a lot of things that I've gotten to that point now where I'd prefer to leave it to an expert. And my skill is bringing the experts together to form a cohesive team to actually generate an end result. So almost a little bit of a matchmaker now more than anything. And but you know, a small enough firm that still roll up my sleeves and write copy from time to time. So it's a good mix.
Yeah. I think that's so important as an entrepreneur to have that skill where you're able to, you know, be able to just not have the mindset of I'm going to do it all myself, and become a bottleneck. So, you know, creating those strategic partnerships and finding those, that talent who's going to take care of the tasks that will, you don't enjoy doing certain tasks. Everyone's like that as well. But even if you enjoy them, sometimes, you know, your expertise is spent better elsewhere. And I think it really is important to just take a step back and examine where you're investing your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's things, for example, because I came out of a newspaper background that, you know, like proofreading blog posts. Oh my heavens, I could be so nitpicky. And, you know, at some point, thankfully years ago, I realized that, you know, this quest for perfection was ridiculous, because even if there was a semicolon missing, or even if we deviated from CP style somewhere, the gist of it was going to get across to the prospect or the client, and, you know, we don't need to pursue perfection. And so, and that goes for even before Communicado in my corporate life, you know, I'd look at like some salespeople's proposals and whatnot, and I'd be like, oh, cringing away thinking, but then if I start rewriting it, then I'm the rewriting guy. I'm not the managing the business guy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let it go. And so, you know, picking what's important and focusing on that and learning to shed things that are unimportant is harder than it sounds, because, you know, we all cling to what we're comfortable and with, and that isn't necessarily what's good for the business.
Yep, I agree 100%. And so what are your goals with Communicado? Where do you see it in 5 years' time?
Well, I hope that it has shelf life beyond me. What I've observed is that a lot of people sell their agencies and then the buyers essentially blow it up because they either don't have the personality that the founder had, or, you know, they somehow they alienate the customer base, or it's just not a fit. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to avoid that. And I'm also hoping to reward the people that helped me get through all these years. So I'm actually right now in a fair bit of sort of succession mindset, I guess, you know, because I'm sort of 3 to 5 years out. I'm hoping to retire in the not too distant future. And that means, you know, that I'm going to hand off Communicado to leave it in good hands with some good people so that the name persists as a as an honorable agency name and one that provides good service for the money.
Love it. Yeah. And I had another agency on the podcast, an agency owner on the podcast months ago. And his tip was that if another agency buys you out, make sure that you guys have the same values, you know, make sure and that you're communicating those expectations of how your clients are used to being treated so that it can be more of a seamless transition. Because that's where a lot of things can kind of blow up there when that's not taken into account from the start.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, if you put this into any other terms, like let's say, well, I just bought this house, right? Well, I don't want the people who used to own this house to tell me how to decorate it or how to renovate it. It's none of their business. I own it now. So, but you know, in the sense of an agency being a service oriented business, relationships are number one. And so how do you maintain that book of business, not alienate those people when it was really built on one-to-one relationships? And that's the tricky bit, I think, is, you know, keeping the people happy as change happens, whatever that means, right?
And yeah,
so you know, it requires, I think, a delicate touch to make that happen and not just be like, you know, okay, here we are, a big agency from, you know, name of huge city here. We're going to tell you how, this is how we do things. And, you know, immediately you're into SAP and timesheets and expense accounts. And effectively you're like, oh my God, what have I done? I sold my business to a bunch of robots.
Yeah, no, that's interesting though. That's a really exciting goal to work towards.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's like, it's not really like a legacy thing. It's more like I built it. It would, and many people helped me build it. So we built it, and
yep,
it would really suck to just sort of throw it away at the end, you know?
Yeah.
So what do we do about that? And it's not necessarily about me extracting value from it or anything. It's more about, you know, how do I make sure that I'm essentially paying it forward, that, you know, the people that helped me get there, get some ripple effect benefits out of the fact that I'm stepping back and someone else is taking the wheel.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. So we're going to move on to the fast five now. So
right,
I have five rapid fire questions for you now.
Okay. Awesome.
So first question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
My go-to answer on this one is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Pertzig. It's an old book, very old, you know, 60s, 70s. It was introduced to me by a philosophy prof at the University of Saskatchewan when I was doing my undergrad. And well, because it's a philosophy book in disguise as a piece of fiction, it's very complex, but the idea is essentially that the pursuit of quality is an end unto itself. So if you're the best person to mow lawns, or you're the whole thing is about a motorcycle trip between two guys, and one is the guy that does his own spark plugs and his own tune-ups, and he pursues quality in the maintenance of his machine, and the other guy buys a Beamer and just goes to the dealership and just drives with them. And so who has more quality, who has more quality of life? And then, anyway, the idea of craftsmanship is what I took from that. And that, you know, whether you're, you know, Michelangelo or a guy at the corner garage, you can still be really excellent at what you do, and you can always polish that a little further.
Mm-hmm.
And that somehow just rang a bell for me back in university, and it stuck with me, that just do your best at your thing.
I love that. Yeah. And keep working at it as well. I think that's, great advice.
Hone your craft.
Yeah.
You know, you can always develop a little more professionally. You can always learn something from somebody else. You know, you can try new experiments, any number of things that you can do, but stagnating, it got fixed in my head that stagnating is not an option.
Yeah. Very good. And what does your morning routine look like?
I am the worst morning person. Somebody just like a few years ago bought me a coffee mug that says, I'm sorry, I'm late. I got here when I wanted to. and I was like sort of the worst fit for a newspaper, but back in the day. But so my morning routine is very slow. I drink coffee, I walk the dog, I think about my day. Now I've just moved to the east, and so that most of our clients are either in Ottawa or Calgary, so lucky for me, that gives me a 2-hour head start, so I can have my sleepy wake up morning and then get to work when Calgary wakes up. It does
Got
mean
it.
That
okay.
I do go through supper, but that's okay. But I really like to sit down and, well, first of all, the day before, I go through my calendar. What am I going to have to do tomorrow? what's urgent, prioritization. I use tools, many tools, but principally I operate my task sorting on Asana. And so that allows me to sit the night before and go, okay, this is top of the heap and that, I'm going to deprioritize that. And this can be next week. And I don't know, that guy forgot to send that and blah, blah. So, you know, it's the night before and then wake up and go, what was that again? Cause I don't remember anything in the morning. And then I have coffee and then I remember everything. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Phew. Yeah. And then, you know, 9:30-ish or something, I start kicking into gear and then start to drift around 5 through 7, you know, so it's kind of that.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
You know, I was always, not in the fanboy sense, but I was always intrigued by Steve Jobs. It's a very cliched answer. The idea of having a vision and then also having the personality to drive that vision, which can sometimes go a little bit authoritarian or sideways, was intriguing to me it's the old consumer marketing thing of if you ask people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses, not a horseless carriage. And so Steve didn't ask people what they wanted. He's like, you want this now. And people are like, you're right. Who knew? and I think that's a victory of imagination. And I like imagination. So that's probably my key CEO one. But I mean, domestically, you know, I quite liked how Gwyn Morgan used to run Encana. There's a whole set of being honorable with the employees and, you know, not taking too much pay and not being greedy. And there was a whole value set that I always thought Mr. Morgan displayed that also stuck in my head and sort of inspired me to be a decent human.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. And what is your favorite online tool?
Well, Tasks, Asana, Facebook, just because I can be like the class clown that I always was in grade 3. And really, I'm just shooting spitballs from the back of the class still 50 years later. And then Sprout Social for managing our business for our client social accounts. So those tools, plus the Google Workspace setup, basically more or less run a ton of our business. There's lots of others, but those would be the key ones. Anytime I've tried to economize on any of those, I've been like, ugh, it doesn't work right. And then I feel like I've lost control of my business, or I don't know where my tasks are at or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes you just pay for the thing you need.
Yeah.
And so that's what we've been doing. And it's nice to have that reliable tech stack that you can take to a client and say, yeah, it's got quirks, but it's fewer quirks than the other ones. And we know how to deal with it.
Very good. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
You could probably encapsulate it as nobody's really thinking about you.
I like
you
that.
Know, 'cause I think certainly in my 20s, I was very concerned about, do they think I'm doing a good job and sort of the whole reputation and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's important, but nobody's sitting at their desk going, you know, I wonder if that Doug is fulfilling his life. You know, it's just like nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And so just to be a lot more yourself and a lot more natural and be less hung up about what people are thinking, different people come from different backgrounds. And so, you know, it took me a long time to get there, I think, where I was just like, whatever the deal is, this is the package I got. So deal with it. And, lots of, even going back to Jan Arden, you hear a lot of her comments to that effect on Twitter, where it's like, you know what, I'm a singer, this is my deal, I'm on TV, you don't like it, suck it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, exactly, that's it, just be yourself.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, have the goals, have the things, you know, that you want to do that make you happy, and just work towards it and ignore anyone who doesn't support you.
Yeah. And you know, I saw a lot of almost like karmic victories where people, you know, stepped on others' fingers and toes on the ladder on the way up to some perceived victory, and then they got really messed up shortly thereafter. And I got a strong sense of like, you know, you reap what you sow. And
yeah.
So, you know, which again is just a variation on the do unto others, right? So yeah, these are very simple rules. Be decent, try to be yourself, help people out, you know. You're worth a fair buck, so don't let anybody hose you. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It's not complicated stuff, really, when you boil it down.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Doug. It was a pleasure to learn about your story and your journey of growing Communicado. So thank you again for joining me for today's episode.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to chat, and I love shop talk. So this has been a real, real fun time. And yeah, I hope the listeners get something out of it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Doug.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.